Previously on The Backside of Water.
I have to say that I loved exploring that area so much, but that it's also great to be back in the studio doing this like we used to in the olden days.
As we discussed, the story of Tomorrowland is inextricably tied to the era in which it was conceived.
Hello, and welcome to the Hall of Forgotten Tomorrowland Attractions, presented by the Stewart Beverage Corporation in partnership with the BSOW Historical Preservation Society.
Disneyland opened on July 17, 1955. But what the park guests saw in 1955 was far from the park we see today.
Al, I have to say, I am truly blown away. This attraction is simply breathtaking.
Guys, take a look at those test tubes.
I have to say, as cool as this exhibit seems like it would be, I'm kind of exhausted by how much it says Monsanto everywhere.
We're now going to take a trip out of this world.
Al, is this part of the ride?
Well, I don't think so, Freddy. Something's not right here.
What do we do?
The only thing we can do, Annie. Brace yourselves!
Al? Freddy? Anyone? I can't see a thing.
I'm still right beside you, Annie.
Same here.
What happened?
Well, it looks like one of the thermal couplers from that overhead hydraulic beam started leaking fluid onto that fission transformer over there, which then led to a short circuit to the motherboard, resulting in a catastrophic power failure. I'd imagine the emergency generators would kick in right about now.
Ah, let there be light.
Well, what do we do now, guys?
Well, I'd imagine Barnacus is going to have us wait until the Imaginarian team can evacuate us out of the attraction.
Oh, hey, Alex, Annie, and Freddy. I got good news, and I got bad news.
Well, what's the good news, Barney?
Well, the good news is everyone's all right, and the attraction isn't a total loss.
What's the bad news?
Well, the bad news is that the short circuit armed the security locks on all the doors that allow us to gain entry into the attraction.
What exactly does that mean?
Well, that means we can't get y'all out of the attraction until we figure out how to bypass those locks.
Barnacus, exactly how long do you expect that to take?
Hard to say, actually. Last time it happened, it only took about 12 hours. Now that we've done this, before, I guess I'd say probably around 11 hours.
Oh my, what in the world?
Al, he's joking, right?
Wait, guys, this could be a good thing.
Good? How could being stuck in this attraction for 12 hours be a good thing?
Oh, come on, Annie, you can't tell me it wasn't a lifelong dream of yours to be able to walk through a Disney attraction of your choosing, totally unhindered by the watchful eye of the safety-obsessed cast member.
Oh, I'm picking up the sticks that you're laying down, Al.
Well, I'm not. What are you guys talking about?
I'm saying that us being stuck in here allows us to explore the rest of the attraction on foot.
Oh my gosh, you're right, that's amazing. But there's only one problem.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, this lap bar, it's kinda stuck.
I'd imagine if we all lift on the count of three, we'd be able to get out of this thing.
Oh, yeah, great idea. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Freedom!
Well, what are we waiting for, guys? Let's check out the rest of the show scenes in the Hall of Forgotten Tomorrowland Attractions. Wow, what do we have here?
Wow, it looks like we're in a space station looking down on Earth right now.
Oh, that's right. This here is a recreation of the Space Station X-1, or Satellite View of America walkthrough that was housed in Tomorrowland from opening day in 1955 until its closure in 1960.
I love how Walt made the space age so accessible to the everyday guest with immersive walkthroughs like this. And the storytelling is top-notch, I mean, even from the very start.
Too true, Annie. Walt and his WED team had an innate skill of creating a space to tell a great story, an attribute that the Imagineers of today are also renowned for. Oh, hey, I can see my house from here.
And Freddy, did you hear that you gave a great pun there? They created a great space to to tell this story. That pun was out of this world.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
tremendous.
Dear.
Well, anyway, it looks like we enter the next room through these docking doors here.
But the doors are huge.
What do they have in here? King Kong?
Oh, wrong production studio, Freddy. Come on.
Hey, let's see if that emergency hatch button over there on the wall still works.
Looks like the power surge destroyed only some of the electrical components, while others stayed intact.
I guess so.
Guys, would you look at that?
Is that a...
Rocket ship!
I grew up looking at pictures of this thing, and now it's right in front of me. It's the most beautiful thing I think I've ever seen.
It really is a work of art.
Hey, this is the rocket ship that used to be displayed outside of Rocket to the Moon, right?
That is absolutely correct, Andrea. This rocket is one of the most iconic landmarks in park history. It was designed by Disney legend John Hinch with the help of infamous rocket scientist Wernher von Braun.
Why does that name sound familiar?
Well, Wernher von Braun was a complicated genius. Originally hailing from Germany, von Braun was a renowned rocket scientist. During the days of World War II, he was employed by Adolf Hitler to design rockets.
Yikes.
Yikes indeed. So, after the end of World War II, von Braun, along with a host of other scientists, were secretly brought to America to work with the U.S. Army and subsequently NASA to win the space race against the Soviet Union. Now, sometime in the early 1950s, von Braun was apparently consulted by WED during the design of this moonliner. The design of this moonliner closely resembled von Braun's V-2 rocket and was meant to represent what the future of space travel would look like in 1986, the year Tomorrowland set. Von Braun can also be seen in Disney's Man in Space special that was produced to show off Tomorrowland before it opened.
Wow, this Wernher von Braun character makes me feel conflicted.
Yeah, he pretty much makes the rest of the world feel that exact same way, Anne.
I mean, he was associated with some pretty awful things during World War II, but also did some great things for the United States as well.
You know, some choose to see von Braun's work as politically neutral, fueled only by his love for rocket propulsion and innovation. Some say that his political affiliations can't be separated from his work, though. Thankfully, our show isn't about unwinding and exploring that kind of topic. We simply bring him up on our show only because we aim to cover the entire history of the parks, and Wernher von Braun was invariably a part of that history.
Fair enough, Al.
This rocket would eventually be removed in 1967, only to reappear for a time around 1998, only this time as a promotional piece for Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola is, after all, the masters in, quote, delivering refreshment to a thirsty galaxy. See.
That's just science.
And you can't argue with that. This rocket is amazing, gang, but the rest of this show scene is just as amazing. It looks like we're in a mid-century airporty, spaceporty type thing. Ooh, and look at that! These plaques over here on the wall pointing to either Moonliner Luna or Moonliner Diana are spectacular recreations for the pre-show area.
That's right. Back when this attraction opened on July 22, 1955, guests would be escorted by the hundreds to either the Moonliner Luna or Diana.
They weren't actually going into a real Moonliner, though, right?
Well, it sure felt that way. Let's actually go back through the Luna here and see what the Imaginarians have cooked up for us here.
Ooh, a circle theater.
This is a perfect replica of the theater as it was seen in the park. I wonder if the floor rumbles still.
Floor rumbles?
So, back when this show could be found in the park, I remember it. Well, I remember Mission to Mars. You'd watch the screen on the floor that's in the middle of the circle in this theater, and once the show started, that screen would light up with what looked like the fiery rocket engine, as though you were looking down through your rocket. And during this part of the show, a series of out-of-balance air-driven motors would engage that simulation and give the effect of rumbling and rocket explosions under our tushies, and then we would all be watching from our seats, freaking out.
So like a 4D theater experience.
Bingo.
So apparently once we had liftoff, you'd see the Earth drift away, and on the screen above us here, you'd see the destination, Earth's moon. As you orbited the moon itself, the video playing would also give facts about space and the moon itself.
And once it was over, the rocket would reverse its process and land safely back in the park in Anaheim.
Wow, what an amazing experience. I can't imagine why this attraction would ever go away.
Well, as with most things in this land, the future caught up with it. As the actuality of moon travel caught up with what was seen in this attraction, it was decided that it was time to make a change. 2 years before Armstrong and his gang moonwalked into the history books, this attraction was redesigned as Flight to the Moon. This show would feature a new Mission Control pre-show that would officially introduce the world for the very first time to a Tomorrowland icon, Mr. Tom Morrow.
Like the one from Inventions?
Well, yes and no. Tom Morrow is a complex character.
Oh, great. Another Wernher von Braun.
Not quite, Annie. Tom Morrow is complex in that he has assumed a number of roles throughout Tomorrowland's history. But I want to save the conversation around Tom for our Inventions Carousel of Progress episode.
Okay, fair enough.
Flight to the Moon would again be redesigned after humans made it to the moon, and in 1975, this attraction would change to Mission to Mars, starring a young animatronic boy named Elon as he dug holes and dreamed of retiring on the Martian surface.
Is that Elon part true, Freddy?
Not even one bit, but you can imagine how awesome it would be if Disney called that one back in the 1970s.
Okay, yeah, I'll give you that. But my question is, where was this mission to the Flight to the Moon to Mars located?
That's a great question. The show building for this iconic attraction is now the Pizza Port Restaurant.
Oh gosh, that's lackluster.
Isn't it? I mean, at least next time you walk through and grab a slice, you can know that this area once housed an amazing and extinct Disney attraction.
With that, we should probably keep moving on. I don't want to have Barnacus and the crew cut our little clandestine tour short.
To the next display!
Guys, okay, look over there. That is an amazing mural. It looks like some sort of primordial alien planetary surface. It's landscape pockmarked by active volcanoes. I mean, what is this attraction?
It's my face in middle school.
Well, Al,
I feel horrible for you.
I really feel bad. But now, judging by that little sign right there, it looks like this is Richfield's The World Beneath Us attraction.
This is an attraction I've never, ever heard of before.
Gosh, I love discovering stuff like this, stuff we never knew even existed in the park.
Well, what are we waiting for? Let's explore the world beneath us.
Aha.
My first question is, what is Richfield anyway?
Well, if I recall, Richfield was an oil and gas company that was extremely popular in the early part of the 20th century. You know, they must have been a sponsor for this attraction.
Maybe that little advertisement over there will provide some insight.
What a cute little woolly mammoth and caveman illustration.
It really is a time capsule for the cartoon style of this mid-century era. The copy on this advertisement says, "Thrill to a new cartoon film by Walt Disney Studios in Technicolor and CinemaScope."
Ooh, sounds fancy.
Indeed it was. It goes on to say, "See powerful underground forces at work in a gigantic section model of the Earth's crust. All this in a setting provided the world's most spectacular diorama." It then concludes with, let's see, "Remember, you haven't really seen Disneyland until you've seen the Richfield show."
Oh, I'm actually a little saddened by that.
Well, why, Al?
Well, you just heard it, Annie. We've never seen the Richfield show, so none of us have actually seen Disneyland. My love for Disney's a lie.
Oh. You don't have to go that far. Listen, the good news is that we can fix this, Al. Aw, we can truly see Disneyland now because they have recreated this attraction here for us to experience live right now.
Guys, look over there. It's the diorama they've been talking about. If my topographical skills mean anything, this looks like a model of the entire Los Angeles basin.
Oh, and look over there, another diorama. It looks like there's a bunch of earthquakes occurring in that one. Yikes.
Oh, so many dioramas. Has anybody got any diorama mean? Well, look, this is a hilarious collection of miniature worlds. If only we could truly see the one beneath us.
Well, Freddy, I think that's what happens in that theater right over yonder.
Well, let's go see if the film works.
Be sure to see The World Beneath Us, the exciting free show everybody's talking about.
Wow, that cartoon covered literally everything from the dawn of time as we know it to today.
It was kind of interesting to watch how all that upheaval in the earth led Richfield to be able to produce gasoline. But one big thing I took away from the presentation was that Richfield is the official gasoline of Disneyland, according to one of the portions of the film. I never knew Disneyland had an official gasoline.
Guys, I hate to say it, but that was a 12-minute animated film trying to sell us Richfield gasoline.
Well, I guess that kind of makes sense why this attraction was free then.
Yeah, apparently they thought they could make their money back after everybody rushed to the Richfield pumps on their way home from the park.
I think this attraction is unique for Tomorrowland, though.
How so, Freddy?
Well, Tomorrowland is all about looking to the future, but this attraction is specifically having us look at the past and the present.
Yeah, that really does kind of feel odd. This plaque here says this attraction lasted from 1955 to 1960, which is really no surprise.
Well, the good news is, I can now say I've truly experienced Disneyland in full.
And for some reason, I really have the urge to go fill up my tank right about now.
Maybe we should get out of here before we all start getting the urge to go get gas. Excuse you.
Oh, well, it looks like y'all didn't really take the whole keep your arms, hands, feet, and legs warning very seriously.
Oh, sorry about that, Barney.
Yeah, we didn't want to miss out on the extinct attraction, so we decided to hoof it, just like old Hoof and Henry.
Oh, well, the good news is we found the source of the electrical issue, and she's all fixed up. Should have you out of there in no time.
Oh, no, Al, we aren't even close to the end of this attraction.
Oh, I've got an idea, Annie. Hey, Barnicus.
Yes, sir.
Once the attraction reset protocols are fulfilled, can we just complete the attraction?
I don't know if that's the best idea, Alex. We clearly got some bugs we need to work out in the system, and I don't want anyone getting hurt in there.
I appreciate the concern, Barnicus, but we really, really want to see the rest of these attractions.
Well, there really are only a couple of show scenes left from the transition into the Magic Tunnelway portion of the attraction.
Magic Tunnelway?
Well, once you get there, the Magic Tunnelway is a walkthrough, so I'm not worried about safety with that section if there's another issue. So, as long as you promise not to report me to the EASHPB for letting you ride the rest of this attraction before it's been tested, I'm happy to let you continue on your journey.
Cross our hearts.
Well, in that case, be sure to stand clear of the track system. Once one of the vehicles arrives, hop on. It won't be able to stop for you, so it might be a little tricky. Power should be coming on back right about now.
Ah, perfect. Thanks, Barnicus.
I hope I don't regret this.
Guys, here comes our ride vehicle. Ready? And jump!
Woof! All right, everybody, pull down your lap bar and let's continue our journey.
We now continue on to the Flight Circle, a circular area in Tomorrowland that would display the magic of flight of all kinds. Here, aspiring pilots young and old could learn to fly these small model aircrafts all over the skies of Tomorrowland.
Guys, do you feel that?
We're lifting off the ground just like those little airplanes that are circling around us.
Whoa, and look at that, there's a dude with a jetpack on flying up next to us.
As we ourselves leave the confines of gravity and take flight, we're joined by none other than Bill Souter, Rocket Man of Tomorrowland.
Oh, Bill Souter and his Bell Aerosystems rocket belt!
Wait, you know this guy?
No, I sure do.
Well, not that guy. I mean, I'm assuming that's an animatronic. But the story of the real Bill Suter and the Bell Rocket Belt is incredible. Believe it or not, the Bell Rocket Belt is a legit jetpack like we've seen in the movies. This rocket belt was designed for the U.S. Army back in the mid-1950s. It was designed to carry a human being on basically a long jump or short flight, depending on how you look at it. It held about 5 gallons of fuel and would only last about 20 seconds of flight time before the thing went empty. So if the person flying didn't time it right, they would actually come crashing back down to Earth. In fact, one of the co-creators of this rocket belt actually broke his kneecap because apparently he didn't time his flight well and plummeted to the Earth.
All in the name of flight.
Pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, it sure is. But Al, why don't we have these kinds of jetpacks flying around with us today? I mean, they really are one of the staples of a futuristic vision of tomorrow, after all.
You're right, Andy. You know, no look into the future is complete without a jetpack as part of that future. But sadly, it won't be the Bell Rocket Belt. After the U.S. Army discovered that this thing could only fly for about 20 seconds, they saw it as ultimately impractical for military use and abandoned the project. It also didn't help that the pilot had to wear an insulated suit in order not to be severely burned to a crisp by this contraption.
So Disneyland naturally bought the pack after the Army rejected it, right?
Well, not exactly. The Bell Rocket Belt became somewhat of its own celebrity, appearing at numerous events on television series like Gilligan's Island, and even in the James Bond film Thunderball. Over 1,200 of these flights were made by Bill Suter himself. He and the suit became basically synonymous with one another. And it only makes sense that Suter and his futuristic gadget would be sought to be showcased in Walt's futuristic wing of the park. Here, Suter would launch from the flight circle and make a quick pass over the skies of Tomorrowland before hurtling back to the Earth.
Oh my gosh, Al, I've seen footage of this guy flying around the park. But honestly, I just thought it was wires and ropes creating the illusion of flight. It is way more magical knowing that this Bill Suter guy was actually flying around the park.
It really is an incredible and fairly iconic piece of Tomorrowland history for sure. After Suter's tenure in the park ended, he would go on to fly over the 1984 and even the 1996 Olympics. He would also write a book about his life as a jetpack pilot called The Rocket Belt Pilot's Manual, which I honestly really want to read.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Guys, I feel like our ride vehicle is dropping us back down to Earth.
As we make our descent, look down and notice the small lagoon and track also located here in the flight circle. Here, guests and professionals could drive around miniature motorized cars and boats, showing people from all over the world that Tomorrowland was a land on the move. Sadly, Flight Circle would deliver its last model flight when it closed at the end of 1965. And now, let's make our way to one of Disneyland's most unknown lands, Hobbyland.
Oh, wait, Disneyland had an additional land named Hobbyland? That sounds amazing.
Yeah, well, I guess we're about to find out.
Birthed from the hobby boom after World War II, Hobbyland opened in the autumn of 1955 and was located in a small area adjacent to Flight Circle. Here, cast members sold models of all kinds, planes, cars, boats, and even dinosaurs. In fact, some of the vehicles showcased in the flight circle itself were available for young racers and pilots to purchase and build right in Hobbyland itself.
Oh, guys, we're driving right through a creation of what I can only imagine is Hobbyland. Oh, look at those awesome circular awnings, a stunning product of the 1950s atomic age design aesthetic.
It really is interesting because Hobbyland is a direct product of its time.
How so, Freddy?
Well, like Hal told us, after World War II, a couple of things happened. Firstly, with the economic boom that occurred after the war, families found themselves with more money in their pockets and more time. As a result, they needed something to do with both. Secondly, with the innovations going on with plastics at the time, the business of model building utterly exploded. Hobbyland is clearly a result of this rise of hobbyists who now had the means and materials to create miniature vehicles of their own.
This really is a fascinating look into a very quaint piece of Americana history.
Sadly, Hobbyland never quite found its audience, as many guests favored the thrilling attractions of Tomorrowland over purchasing and building small models inside the shaded cover of Hobbyland. As a result, Hobbyland would sell its last tugboat in 1966, making way for a walkway.
That's it? They just put a walkway in there? It's really sad to see these amazing little Disney oddities disappear. But I can't fault them for getting rid of these types of areas and attractions, especially to put a walkway in.
Very true, Al. Wait, look up ahead. What is that?
It's shining like a radiant city on a hill.
Like an entire world covered in metallic shine.
We're now entering the Aluminum Hall of Fame.
Aluminum Hall of Fame?
The Aluminum Hall of Fame opened with the park on July 17, 1955. As we enter the exhibit, notice the 40-foot telescope brilliantly created out of polished aluminum. This would have been the first thing guests would encounter when entering into the exhibit. Throughout the rest of their journey, guests would learn about the story of aluminum, from how it is mined to its uses in the past, present, and future. And up ahead, you'll see Cap, the Kaiser Aluminum Pig.
Wait, hold the phone. The Kaiser Aluminum Pig?
Wait, shh, Al, I want to hear more, please, about this pig.
That's right. Kaiser here would play as your host when exploring the amazing world of aluminum.
That huge sculpture of that star structure surrounding the planet Venus is absolutely stunning. It looks like people might have called it the brightest star in the world of metals.
And, I mean, Kaiser the pig, you guys. The pig is a host. I can't get over this. And that mural of all the uses of how aluminum is used is awesome. Oh, look, it's changing right before our eyes. It looks like it's using those old-school blacklight tricks. It's classic.
As they exited the exhibit, guests would be encouraged to stop by the information desk where they could ask questions about the aluminum wonders seen inside, as well as any other aluminum-related questions. Kaiser would stay in the park only until 1960, immediately after its contract expired. The company believed that the Disneyland TV show presented too many competitors to their products and decided to sever ties as a result. As we near the end of our journey, you'll notice we are bathed in brilliant, colorful light from the panels overhead. You'll also see a color wheel swirling on the wall in front of you. This is an original piece from the Dutch Boy Color Gallery. Here, guests would have the opportunity to mix colors on transparent circles and get a rating on whether the color combination was good or bad. This attraction would open in 1955, but be erased from the canvas of Tomorrowland in 1963.
Oof, that attraction was a bit lackluster.
Al, admittedly, not all of them can be home runs.
True enough, Freddy. Oh, the floor is opening up.
And from the looks of it, we're like 80 feet off the ground. I didn't ever feel us rising in the first place. This is weird.
Oh, hey, guys, this looks familiar.
That's because we're traveling over Disneyland right now.
We're now traveling through the skies of Disneyland on the Skyway to Fantasyland.
The Skyway?
I knew this felt familiar.
So many memories riding the Skyway.
I hate to say it, guys, but I never got the chance to ride this one since I didn't grow up around the park.
Oh, Al, you really did miss a thrilling, sometimes terrifying experience riding one of these. It's a staple of pretty much any theme park at this point.
Added to the skies over the park in the autumn of 1955, this gondola attraction was one of the first installations of this type of transportation, where guests are invited to sit in a small box suspended from a large metal cable.
So this is basically like a ski gondola, right?
Pretty much, but at this point in history, the gondola had not really been invented or widely used. During the creation of Disneyland, Walt caught wind that a Swiss industrial manufacturer called Von Roll was in the testing phase of their new system that moved people through the sky in a gondola box. Walt was intrigued by this new form of transportation and needed to have one to show off at his park. It also perfectly fit the theme of a world on the move. So Walt tasked Imagineer John Hench, you've heard his name before, with the creation and installation of the Skyway. who in turn worked with the Von Roll Company, the creators of the gondola system. The Skyway was built lightning fast and cost $300,000, which is roughly $3 million in today's money. This Skyway was cool because it was the spiritual grandparent to both the monorail and the people mover that would later be featured in Tomorrowland.
One of the things that was so cool about the Skyway was that you passed through the Matterhorn Mountain on your journey to Fantasyland. But, believe it or not, it wasn't always like that. Since the Skyway opened up in 1955, the skies were open and clear for the first couple years of its operations. But when the Matterhorn was built in the late 1950s, it was directly in the path of the Skyway to Fantasyland. Instead of tearing down this beloved attraction, Walt would actually have the Matterhorn built around the Skyway itself in order to preserve this Skyway of wonders. They called the space that the Skyway traveled through Glacier Grotto. Though, oddly enough, they did very little to theme that space, instead leaving support beams and the structure of the Matterhorn itself exposed for all the riders to see.
In the early days of this attraction, you'd be able to purchase a round-trip ticket, but later on in its life, it became a one-way tripper. And speaking of later on in its life, in 1965, famed Disney vehicle guy Bob Gurr was tasked with the redesigning of these buckets. But this was not an easy task, as the new bucket had to go from seating two guests to four, and he could only make the bucket itself a few pounds heavier than the original, thanks to some space-age plastic tech that had been created and Gurr's amazing design abilities. The new bucket hit the exact requirements he was tasked with.
The Skyway would carry 150 million passengers during its lifespan, but would ultimately end up closing on November 9th, 1994.
Why did it close?
Well, there's speculation around that, actually. The official word from Disney was, with waning guest numbers and the opening of Indiana Jones in Adventureland, it only made sense for them to transfer the workforce from Skyway to Indy. Other suggestions are that it closed because of very costly structural repairs that were needed, though nothing on that has ever been confirmed.
I really wish I could have ridden the Skyway, but I guess this simulation's gonna have to do.
As we enter the Tomorrowland station, we find ourselves at the end of our journey through the Hall of Forgotten Tomorrowland attractions. We want to thank you for taking this journey through time with us and hope you'll join us again real soon. This is Hal Holliday, and I'll see you in the future.
Well, gang, it looks like we exit onto this moving walkway.
A little nod to Haunted Mansion here. Nicely done, Imaginarians.
Oh, guys, that was an amazing attraction, even if it did break down in the middle there.
They really have outdone themselves with this one.
I don't know about you guys, but my head is pretty much filled to the brim with knowledge at this point. I know it may sound weird coming from me, but I need a little breather after that.
I couldn't agree with you more, bud. Tomorrowland has more extinct attractions within its boundaries than pretty much the rest of the park combined.
It was so cool being able to relive all of them again like this, many of them for the very first time. That is an experience I'll never forget. But yes, a break is definitely needed.
So in that case, let's head over to the commissary and get a snack. They also have a root beer machine that actually makes the root beer lighter than air. We call it Root Air. It's delicious.
Sounds very strange, but it may be exactly what we need to get the energy to explore even more of the history of Tomorrowland.
Amen to that, Freddy, because we haven't even scratched the surface at this point.
Yeah, we are without a doubt going to have to make this into at least a three-part, if not four, maybe five-part exploration of the history of this part of the park. It's just too big.
You're too right. But in the meantime, while we go grab some sustenance, listeners should jump over to our Instagram page where they can check out all of our latest updates and fun there, as well as engaging with our Facebook group. They can find both of those by searching The Backside of Water on either one of those platforms.
That's right. All you need to do is check out our pictures and our personal Instagrams as well. I'm Skipper Freddy on Instagram.
I'm Annie Rugit.
And Annie...
Yeah, I'm Annie Rugit.
Oh, you are Annie Rugit.
I'm and Annie Rugit?
Are you? Well, then who am I? With that, I'd say let's go get our food and beverage on.
Let's do it.
Barnicus, can you send over a... Hollow Mover?
As you enter, me, watch your head, and watch your step. If you happen to miss your step and hit your head, please watch your language.
Nice touch.
To the commissary!